Next on the Capital Connection, it's Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. We talk a lot about the Republican Party convention, their agenda, and how it could impact New York. We also talk congestion pricing, the cannabis industry, and much more. That's New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes on this week's Capital Connection. Next. Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week, back again, New York State Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. She's a Democrat from the Buffalo area, the 141st Assembly District. In the heat, in the humidity, after some great storms last night, you joined me on a Wednesday this week. How you doing, Assembly Majority Leader?
I am going well. Thank you for asking. The heat is not a problem. It's not going to last long enough to complain about it. But the humidity, on the other hand, is a bit challenging.
It certainly is. And I think one of the things that we could talk about right off the top is that by the end of session, we saw a number of environmental pieces of legislation that stalled, that didn't go anywhere. The New York Heat Act is one example. Mm-hmm. You also, in referencing the humidity, are noting something that you and I have been talking about for a long time, which is the state needing to recognize that the climate is changing and that we need to take steps, whether it's infrastructure, whether it's solar panels in making our roads and bridges easier to cross and safe from flooding, whatever it may be, we need to deal with it. And this is just one more sign this week when we've seen now tornadoes really do a number on Rome, New York this week. And other places are also being evaluated for severe weather. That's exactly what the scientists told us was going to happen.
It's exactly what the scientists told us is going to happen if we don't make some changes. By the way, I do think New York is poised to begin making those changes with some speediency more than any other state in the nation, honestly. Well, maybe with the exception of California. And I think in pursuit of that, you know, just the act that was passed some years ago, a few years ago, that we're hoping to have some things in place soon, there's a council that was set up. And so I think what we should be doing is trying to engage that council in a way to see where they are in their plans and what their thoughts are. What we're doing on while we're waiting for that, or while we're not pursuing it, I should say, is we're actually taking their role. Legislators are coming up with ideas on how we can move this thing faster, And I'm not saying that legislators shouldn't come up with ideas, because we do need to try to figure some things out. But we do need the Climate Action Control Panel that we've put together to begin speaking up on these topics and saying which direction and how quickly we should be moving into them.
I'm wondering, Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes, what your thought was on the suspension of congestion pricing. Boy, did that blow up and cause problems at the end of the session. And many in the Democratic Party were not happy about that. There was also the other side of it. The governor argued basically the idea of charging $15 is a tax. You had some upstate lawmakers, even some from New Jersey, complaining. But the argument again here is the congestion in New York City and more use of public transportation, and also the idea that there's less pollution, less gas-guzzling cars down there.
Well, you know what? That's a problem that needs a solution. There's no question to it. Here's what I think we should have some gratitude about, is New York is one of the most popular cities in the world. If people can get there and live there and be tourists there or visit family there, they go. In spite of the traffic, in spite of all of those issues, they still go. New York City is a desirable place. And so I think we should be doing, as electeds, what will enhance their visit. I thought that that was going to be congestive pricing. I still think it could be. Although, honestly, I have no desire to travel into that area in a car. But, you know, politics dictates some things different ways at different times.
Sure.
And we are in a political business, and we need to understand that and come to that reality. And our inability to understand that reality could negatively impact things later, as we've seen that happen in the past. And so I would have supported it continuing like it was planned, and I support the opportunity to slow it so that we can figure out the politics of it all and get it back on the right track.
Well, it's interesting because those are both sides. And it certainly, when you look at studies, like they did it in London, and people complained. They didn't like the idea of charging to go into London. But once they implemented it, the stories that I've read showed that people were very happy with the result. Less congestion, easier to move around the city. But then on the other hand, we're dealing with the political realities of a presidential year in the United States. That's the other side of this you're referring to. And we have congressional candidates that want to keep their seats.
Yeah, and we need to keep a Democratic president. The political pieces of it are just a reality that you cannot walk away from. I mean, as I think we probably have walked away from far too many political realities in the past, and here we are to a point where we are where the Heritage Foundation is pushing forward with a horrific agenda that would, of all the things that we like as Democrats, we will not be able to enjoy anymore. Because that's going to change.
Project 2025, you're referring
Project
to.
Project 25, yeah. And, you know, you are listening to what the Supreme Court has just recently done. We really do need to start playing politics here, because otherwise we're going to be in a position where people who look like me are going to be subject to Jim Crow again. Oh. Women will not have opportunities to determine how they take care of themselves and their families. There won't be opportunities for people to come to the greatest country in the world. They're going to shut it down. I mean, these things are scary, and it's all political. It's not innuendo. It's people who have been sitting in the back room for the last 20 years planning, or maybe 30 years planning. And you can tell this, a plan was in the works ever since President Obama was denied an opportunity to make an appointment to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been progressively going along till we have what we have, where Roe versus Wade is gone. I mean, these are political decisions that people need to understand, and we need to get a new reality check. Like, everything is not going to be what I want right now. I need to plan for what's going to happen for my children 20 years from now.
All right. Well, let's parse this a little more. So you're pointing out that basically the values of the Democratic Party are what matter. If you look at what the Republican Party is projecting in their plans, it's dangerous in your mind. So now you throw in this wrinkle of the Biden debate performance, a perception that he's too old and someone else should step in. He says no. Now you have division in the Democratic Party. But as you said, there's a political reality here. And, you know, like referencing Ruth Bader Ginsburg, she didn't step down, and maybe she should have. Should he step aside?
Maybe she should have. Then we wouldn't be where we are with so many Supreme Court decisions.
Yeah. So what should Biden do? What are we going to do here?
Biden should run. He should run, and we should run. We should work aggressively as we can to make sure that he gets elected. By the way, I think he's already winning. In spite of what the polls say, I think he's already winning. I think just his record alone of what he's done for the last 4 years says to people that this guy can get things done. And what it also says to me very clearly, and I hope it says it to other people, is that he's not doing these things on his own. He's surrounding himself with people who are smart enough to figure out how to do it, and then he's getting support that he needed out of Congress to make it happen. Even though it was a challenge, he battled it the whole way. With, like, the infrastructure law. The 33 in Buffalo wouldn't be happening if it wasn't for that. And these things are happening all over the country that benefit people's lives. He was able to put the right people in the room to do that. Under the Republican nominee, no one's going to be able to tell him anything. In fact, the people who tell him something that's contrary to what he believes personally will be fired. And honestly, Project 25 wants to allow him to do that. You can't be a civil servant and have protections. You know, you got to go.
What about the immunity? I mean, the immunity question of the Supreme Court?
Yeah, it's real serious. And for people who think that this won't affect them, I'm going to need them to go through history.
That's the problem, Crystal People Stokes. You're political. You know the history. The average American person does not. They listen to social media. They get into their political group. They are politicized. They're told at a very young age, whether they're Republican and Democrat or otherwise, and they follow that vote down the ballot. So now you've got them energized for a couple of reasons. One, we just saw a horrifying situation where the former president was almost assassinated. You know, that's roused his supporters now. And he has a lot of energy and he shows it. That's also exciting to his supporters. I don't see that kind of energy and excitement around President Biden, even though I agree with you that if you just followed the ideas and paid attention, there would be no choice as to who was more fit, let's say, for president. But that's not the case of how Americans look at things. Don't you agree?
It's not, unfortunately, but those of us who care, and I think, you know, as a black American, and I think black people in general care a lot more about America than most people do because we've suffered the most to help build it. We've suffered the longest to help build it. We didn't get much for what we have put in, but we're still here fighting for it. And so I have no intentions on stepping back because some people think, you know, that he's too old or that he doesn't have energy. There are people around him with a lot of energy. I often think about this scene where former President Barack Obama made the big announcement that Osama bin Laden had been taken down. He was sitting in a room full of people, and I think he was the only, maybe there was maybe three other people of color in the room.
Mm-hmm.
These are Americans that were sitting around with the wherewithal to make a decision like that to begin protecting not just this country, but the world from horrific guys like the one they took down. So you don't do these things on your own. And for the Democrats who think that somehow Biden is not going to be capable enough to put in qualified people to help him figure out how to move this country forward in the same way that he did through the last 4 years, like, you know, doing things like the Chip and Science Act, which is going to be a major benefit for New York, doing things like trying to protect reproductive rights, these are things that people want to see happen. Why would you not support the man that's making it happen with his team? Because he's not doing it by himself.
What do you make of a guy like Tim Scott, the African-American senator from South Carolina, who's on the Republican Party?
Not much. Not much.
I have to imagine it must be hard to watch someone like that. It's hard for me to watch him.
It's difficult, and I don't.
Yeah.
I was, you know, raised by my parents, my father in particular, always said this, if you can't say something nice about somebody publicly, don't say anything. And so I'm going to stay there because I have nothing nice to say about that guy.
Well, let's see if you have anything to say about Elise Stefanik. She spoke last night, the Republican congresswoman from upstate. Here's what she
said. She's scary. That's all I can say. She's scary.
Let me get your reaction to this. Our Constitution and the soul of our very nation are on the ballot, she said. She says, under Joe Biden, the American people have suffered crisis after crisis, from the Biden border to Biden inflation to skyrocketing prices for groceries, gas and utilities to Biden's violent crime crisis fueled by Democrats' pro-criminal sanctuary cities and defund the police policies like we have seen in my home state of New York. Your reaction?
By the way, that's all political rhetoric. It's not even true. It's not even true. It's their message. It's their political message. It's not true. They don't want immigrants here. I'm not sure why they were immigrants. They weren't natural Americans.
It sounds like she's referring to bail reform, too, and crime, which overall violent crime is down.
Violent crime is down, and there have been no horrific violent issues. And, yeah, so maybe one of the immigrants did get in a fight with somebody and somebody died. That happens in rural America.
And nobody is wishing anybody be killed. It's horrific no matter who does
it. No one's wishing that.
But the majority of violent crimes are not committed by immigrants.
They're not, and they're not necessarily committed by people of color.
Of course. Well, so you have the debate coming up. You have, obviously, a long time between now and November. You're still hopeful, though? You think... What I worry about is more stumbles from Biden, because it would be quite natural for someone of his age and the need to be going all the time to, at that next debate, have another problem, and that's not going to help.
Well, you know what? Let me just say this. My mom passed at the age of 96, and she had all her faculties. She could have been president. 96, she could have been president. And she would have been able to say, no, I'm not going to be able to do that right now. You do this and you do it this way, unless you think there's a better way we should do it that will get us better results. I think the man can still communicate with people. And by the way, just a full disclosure, I don't watch debates because it doesn't matter to me what he says. I already know what his record is. The debates are for the media and for them, the consultants and the pollsters, to figure out how to make more money. I don't need to hear that. I already know what the man did. And I'm going to vote for him for that reason. And I already know his opponent. I'm clear about who his opponent is. Why do I need to watch another debate? I don't. And I won't.
Well, and then there's the media itself, right, that is struggling, like WAMC and other outlets, to try to tell the truth. And when you have so much misinformation now, and you have networks that are wholly bought and owned by the Republican Party, and I'll say there are liberal entities as well that push the envelope, you're having a real problem with getting the skinny, the straight information on things, and people tend to turn to their social media sites where they feel comfortable and where they can spout off. It's really a dangerous time when democracy, as the Bill of Rights says, needs to survive with the Fourth Estate, with a reliable, factual media. And there they were, Carrie Lake at the Republican convention last night, basically saying the fake media wasn't welcome in the room.
Well, I'm sure Fox was front and center. I mean, because all I could probably do is laugh at stuff like that, because it's not real. Just like Twitter, it's not real either. So if it's not something to do with what's happening in my district that I need people to know, I don't want to engage in it.
Yeah, but it's the young people that do.
That's why I put information on there that I'm engaged with in my community, so because I know young people are engaged with it.
Yeah, and while we're at it, that's one of the major initiatives that the governor is after right now, right? The idea of the cell phones use in schools. And we've seen so many problems with suicidal ideation and young girls especially, but both young men and women being bullied. It's on the internet forever. You see all sorts of associated problems with learning because they got these cell phones in hand, in their pockets, in the school. And some new articles and new information and research has come out to show that when you take the phones away from kids during the day, a lot of good things happen, including better mental health.
Well, you know what? I honestly think it's worth a try. There was a day and time in our society when no one had a cell phone, less than a kid in every classroom, did not have a cell phone. I watch adults out to dinner at a sports event, even at concerts. They're on their phones. They're looking at it. Why are you looking at your phone when you're here to have dinner with somebody or watch a football game or be entertained by somebody who's singing in front of you? I mean, why do you still need to have your cell phone? We are attached to them in a way that's not healthy. And if it's affecting adults that way, imagine how it's affecting children and young people. And by the way, you said it. The bullying that goes on these things, the arrangements for to meet for fighting and all those things, that should not be happening in school. And so if there is a way, and I don't know what it is, because I know some parents are going to be concerned, that I want to be able to contact my kid if something is happening. Because look at all the shootings that happen. Parents are concerned about sending their kids to school without being in direct communication with them. They're not trusting the system to protect them, because how many schools have not been able to protect children from gun violence? I mean, so this is like a catch-22, and we got to find a happy balance. But I think there's a way that these phones can be collected and given back after school is over. Or if there's some emergency that's happened, reconnect it with your phone so you can reach out to your parents. But not that you sit in the classroom and have access to your phone while you're there and you're supposed to be learning math and you're on the phone sending texts. or on social media. It's not helping our investment in education at all.
Crystal Peoples-Stokes, we're speaking with. She's the majority leader in the New York State Assembly. I'm David Gustina, and this is the Capital Connection. You know, you referenced guns. Let's go back for a moment to the assassination attempt against former President Donald Trump. First of all, violence has no place in a democratic society. None. Just none. But when you look at this issue, there it was again, wasn't it? The gun, the AR-15, a young man with a gun, too many guns in this country, too easy to get access to them. And in this case, some real questions about the security surrounding the event. What about it? I mean, you saw what happened in Buffalo. Guns, guns, guns everywhere.
Yeah, well, we do need to lose them. But, you know, the people in that room at that convention or at that rally, they will not support anything that says you shouldn't have a gun as a young person. So if you're not going to support that kind of thing, then at least you should support your candidate that's standing in front of you. I don't know why there wasn't more protection for him. And by the way, I have to be totally full disclosure, honest. I don't personally care for that man, but I don't wish harm on anyone.
Right.
And that, I think, is just, you know, the most horrific thing that could happen, for you to be standing and speaking to your people the way you want to talk to them, no matter who likes it, and someone shooting at you. If you don't like what he's saying, don't go. I mean, I just think
and
it's the
vote.
Worst thing.
Vote against him, right?
Yes,
go to the ballot box and vote against him.
No, we don't need weapons the way we have them in this country. But I do want to just bring this to folks' attention. The people who are fighting to keep the weapons, they're going to be the ones who are well-armed when we get to this point where they think their militia needs to take over government.
And I wonder, are you worried if, assuming Biden were to win, what happens with those supporters? Are they going to turn violent?
I am. They're going to be violent. I am worried about that. I wouldn't say I'm worried, but I'm concerned that it's going to happen. I'm concerned, and I have been concerned since the first Trump administration, that there's a desire to see another civil war.
Well, I hope they're planning in Washington for better security this time.
Well, I hope they're not only planning for better security, but sometimes, you know, guns are not the wrong thing for everybody. They're the wrong things in the wrong people's hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so while we're keeping some people who are honest and doing what they should be doing as a citizen, putting themselves in a position where they can protect their families, we can't keep taking away their opportunity to do that, because these other people are fully armed.
Right. And if they haven't done it yet, after children, Sandy Hook, little children, murdered, how are they going to do it now?
How are they going to do it? And when are they going to stop radicalizing young people over the internet to go and kill people? That's probably how that guy was recruited. I mean, it's a sick society that uses young people in the way we're using ours.
What about the argument that the Democrats have caused this because they say that Trump's an authoritarian and he's going to ruin democracy and you caused this to happen?
But it's true. But that doesn't mean we want you to go get a gun and shoot at him. We want you to go to the polls and vote.
Right.
That's what we want you to do. No one should be shooting at the man that was a former president. No one.
Agreed. Well, we got a little bit more time. I want to end with this because you've been so prominent on this issue and you've been out there supporting it. Legalize cannabis. Are we finally getting our act together here? What is going on?
I want to say our act was never not together. What it was brand new, a new agency, a new bureaucratic agency, by the way. And we just did not give it the proper, I want to say, resources of staffing and that it needed to get off the ground. And I'm saying staffing with expertise, not staffing that was just hired fresh and said, okay, go do this. I want to say there's multiple agencies within the state who could have sent in their top-tier IT people, their top-tier recruiters, their top-tier lawyers. They could have sent in the top-tier from every agency in the state to help pull this brand-new agency together, but we didn't do that. I notice I'm saying we, even though it's not a legislative agency, it's an administrative agency. But we didn't do that. And because we didn't, we allowed things to drag along so slow that it gave the, I would say, opposition, and I don't say opposition because they don't want legalized cannabis to happen, but the opposition to social equity, a chance to fester. And while they festered, they introduced lawsuits, they put out negative information, they set up all sort of online news outlets, again, spewing negative news about social equity. They took out full-page ads against the governor, slamming her for things that, how could you slam somebody for something that, one, they didn't vote for. Two, they're trying to get implemented, and what you should be trying to do is trying to help them and not politicize it by bringing them down. All of these things they did, not because they don't think cannabis should be legal. They did it because they would like to have access to that first. not social equity first, not farmers first, not New York small businesses first. They wanted access first. They didn't get it, and so they helped delay the process of starting a new agency in a bureaucratic system in the state of New York. That notwithstanding, New York still ends up being the state in America with more social equity, I'm going to say straight black and brown people with license, than anywhere else in the country. And you can combine every state across the nation if you like, and you will not meet the numbers that have been met in New York State. That's even before the exit of the executive director. So I'm going to just imagine that under the new interim director and the search that they have on now for a new director, that's only going to get better. I'm going to have to imagine that.
And will we see some numbers? You know, I keep asking the comptroller, how much are we getting? What numbers do we have from legal cannabis benefiting the state coffers? Is there anything written in that law that you're keeping track of the numbers here?
Well, the state comptroller keeps track of all numbers, doesn't he?
I don't know. Like I said, I asked him. He's not in favor of marijuana. That's not his thing. But I don't see any numbers coming from anywhere. You see these other states. They report how many millions they've made. You see town by town in Massachusetts how they do. I'd like to be able to see some numbers, you know, like on the casino industry. We've seen that. On the new legal marijuana industry. That's all.
You know what? I'd like to see that as well. And I mean, if he's not necessarily looking at how you come up with those numbers, let's just look at the number of people who have jobs that didn't need a permit.
Yeah, all those numbers would be great.
Didn't need a license.
Yeah.
Lawyers, these new online publications that are popping up all over the place. Graphic artists, people who sell lighting equipment for growth purposes.
Sure.
There's all sort of people who are making money because of the legalization that does not require a license and is not necessarily regulated. So there's money being made.
Sure. Love to hear what it is.
Maybe I'll add my voice to yours and see if the controller can put those down in black and white for us.
That would be fantastic. Well, you know, I could keep talking to you, but eventually they'd all get bored with us, I think. Maybe not you, but certainly me, Assembly Majority Leader Crystal Peoples-Stokes. You've been fantastic as usual. I appreciate our conversations on the Capitol Connection, and I only look forward to the next one, hopefully in the somewhat near future.
I look forward to that as well. If you would share with Paul in my Albany office your email address, I'm going to send you a list of the jobs. There's a whole list of jobs that people are now working in the cannabis industry.
That would be wonderful. I appreciate it very much. And I wish you a wonderful rest of your summer. Rest up. It's going to be a crazy election season. Everyone, make sure you vote.
Absolutely. We must get out and vote. It's our civic responsibility to vote.
The Capitol Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. You can listen to The Capitol Connection anytime at wamcpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcast. And join us again next week at this same time for another political conversation. For The Capitol Connection, I'm David Giustina. Support for the Capitol Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative.